Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for May 14th, 2023. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. You can find my columns full page each and every week in the Torch newsletter. If you are not a subscriber to the Torch, you are missing out. PWTorch.com/GoVIP is where you're going to want to go to get signed up. We have a little bit of a lull, such as it is, here in the world of professional wrestling, especially with the big shows in pro wrestling, which is what we specialize in covering here on Wrestling Night in America. We just had WWE's Backlash last weekend, and it's going to be another 2 weeks until we have an absolutely loaded weekend with WWE's Night of Champions emanating from Saudi Arabia on Saturday. And then the next night, Sunday night, is AEW's Double or Nothing pay-per-view. So we will have you covered Sunday night. After Double or Nothing goes off the air, I'll be going on the air taking your reaction not only to Double or Nothing, but to Night of Champions as well. So if you watched either one of those shows or both and want to give your thoughts, you're going to want to tune in to that instant reaction show right after Double or Nothing goes off the air. Next week will be our big preview show, previewing both Night of Champions and Double or Nothing, so that's going to be very exciting as well. Tonight, excitement is in the air as I welcome in our co-host for the evening. It is PWTorch.com contributor Joel Dinell. Joel, welcome back to Wrestling Night in America.
It's great to be back here with you, Greg. I'm really excited and been looking forward to this all week long.
So you're sort of in the eye of the storm, as it were. We had Backlash last weekend. We've got the big preview show next weekend. We've got the two pay-per-views the weekend after that. So we're kind of in the middle, which is nice because we kind of get to pick and choose what we want to talk about, such as we can. And I want to start by looking back at Backlash. That seemed to be a show that was universally praised. I looked at the roundtable reviews in the Torch newsletter from the staff. There was nothing below an 8.0, which, you know, you're used to seeing that for AEW. WWE, they've been putting on more consistently good PLEs or pay-per-views or whatever you want to call them, but this is another step even above that. So what do you think of Backlash? Is it deserving of the high praise that it's been getting?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I mean, the way I really grade a lot of looking at these kind of bigger, like you said, PLEs or pay-per-views or however you want to refer to them as is, you know, did the main event stuff work and did the top-level storylines work? And I think that what we're seeing continuing after we know that Vince is kind of more back into the fold or has more influence is that the top-line stuff in WWE is still maintaining, you know, some cohesion, a lot of interest, there's intrigue in it. You look at the Bloodline storyline, that stuff is still really good. The stuff that's happening with Cody Rhodes and Brock Lesnar, you know, the follow-up of the stuff that we saw on Raw, I thought was pretty excellent for the top-line stuff, and also SmackDown as well for the Bloodline. But overall, Backlash, you know, I mean, obviously the first thing that stands out on the show is the crowd reaction. You know, the Puerto Rican crowd is so starved to having some big-time wrestling show, there. And to have something like Backlash there where the storylines do feel really hot, they really played into, the Latino culture by bringing in Bad Bunny and really elevating the LWO, it's just something that we didn't used to see, you know, in WWE of yesteryear, where a lot of times when they were going into a specific city, it was typically to humiliate somebody or bash the fans or, you know, any sort of cheap way to get some heat. And this show was really kind of the opposite of that, where they really were playing to that and really trying to get people excited. And hopefully that's something that we can continue to see under, you know, Paul Levesque being the main person under creative moving forward.
It was kind of a love letter to Puerto Rico, you know, and its fans with Zelina Vega, with Bad Bunny, with the cameos by Savio Vega and Carlito. I mean, it was a real hat tip. And that, like you said, is not something we're used to seeing. This is, you know, kind of what we've been begging for when WWE goes into these hometowns, like acknowledge them. And it's not – and I can see WWE's attitude being, well, we're playing for a broader audience. We're not playing for – the audience necessarily that's in the arena. We're also playing for the millions watching at home. And I get that. But I think you can see what doing something positively for the crowd can do to an audience. I mean, it jacked them up. They were hot the mm-hmm. entire time. And if WWE had done their usual booking, and I know Zelina Vega lost, but she looked good in defeat. She got a standing ovation at the end. WWE lingered on her. They didn't just kind of move away and stuff like that. So, you know, they did the right thing by the live crowd. And that same show in front of a less hot crowd, I don't think gets as much positive attention as this show did.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. That like I said, the wrestling was good. You know, the Bad Bunny and Damian Priest stuff, I think, blew away anyone's expectations, you know, of what they thought an outsider celebrity like Bad Bunny, who has had some WWE experience, of really what he could do against someone like Damian Priest, who hasn't been, you know, who hasn't been presented at that higher level. And now it seems like WWE is viewing him a little bit differently. But when you have a hot crowd like that, I mean, it just really elevates the show, you know. And when WWE does make that argument, you know, about that we're playing to the larger audience, it's like, well, what sports, live sports events do you see that are just played at, you know, it's just, here's just the NBA. It's not affiliated with a town that has an emotional investment where they're going to get more excited because it's their home team playing, you know? And the more that you can get people invested, or the more that you can play to that, you know, play into the, wherever you're at, try and put that person into an elevated position, whoever you have on the roster. In this case, like you said, Zelina Vega, you know, bringing back some people, as well, and then also spotlighting Damian Priest, bringing in Bad Bunny. You know, anytime that you can do that, based on location, like, you're going to get a better reaction from that. Now, Puerto Rico, this was an anomaly. That if I don't know how many other places there are, you know, where WWE could go and get this level of a reaction, because they just hadn't been there for so long, and then just booking a lot of things just kind of came together really well. That you're right, that it's a very much a stark contrast from going from Puerto Rico to Jacksonville, Florida, where AEW, you know, that is kind of their home base, or it was very much so during the pandemic. And you heard Cody Rhodes play into that a little bit, but just the crowd was just, I mean, it's night and day between those two.
I don't want to get too far into Night of Champions because that's our preview show, but we do have three matches announced so far, so we'll do the full card preview next week. We anticipate getting more matches announced on Raw and on SmackDown this week, but the three matches that have been announced, you can imagine these being the top three on the show. Seth Rollins versus AJ Styles in the tournament final to crown a World Heavyweight Champion. Cody Rhodes versus Brock Lesnar in a Backlash rematch. And Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens defending their unified tag team titles against Roman Reigns and Solo Sikoa. So let me start with Rollins and Styles. Is this the right tournament final, do you think, for this belt, given who was in the tournament to begin with?
Well, I mean, it's definitely not who I was predicting by the end of this tournament. I thought that, you know, I thought there was a good chance that Seth Rollins would be involved, definitely. But I also, like a lot of other people, thought this might be the time for Edge, you know, to kind of give Edge mm-hmm. that last run to go towards the top. So I was pretty surprised that, you know, AJ Styles comes back. And definitely, I mean, I can't argue that it's positive that AJ comes back and they're giving him a push. They're putting him in a major title match at Night of Champions. But, you know, you look at the people who are in here, and maybe, you know, maybe I would have changed it up a little bit just to give a little bit more to each of these competitors. I mean, what would the harm be in moving the bracket for Damian Priest and, you know, getting him at least into the semifinals, you know, after him having the Night of Champions that he did, or not the Night of Champions, the Backlash match that he did. And then what message would that send that he does that with Bad Bunny and now he gets into the semifinals? Granted, against perhaps maybe different opponents. But, you know, I mean, I think that this is fine because really the World Heavyweight, it's kind of already seeming like it's dipping into the territory that I thought it would, which is very much the secondary world championship. And now I don't want to get the cart before the horse, but it's leaning that direction, you know, where it seems like something, if you were just to assume what would a secondary world title look like, not physically, but what would the booking of it look like? It'd probably be something that, you know, they'd put on Seth Rollins, you know, somebody like that where they're near the top, but they're not the number one star. So that makes a lot of sense to me, but I would have just liked to have seen them shake it up a little bit, you know, maybe elevate Damian Priest a little bit. You know, perhaps keep Cody out of the thing altogether, even though it led into the thing with Brock Lesnar. Maybe see something a little bit more for Edge. Maybe, you know, move out Bobby Lashley, you know, for something else and kind of groom him a little more for Roman Reigns at some point. You know, so there would be a little bit of tweaks, but ultimately it's kind of the destination I thought it would be at.
There's been a lot of complaints about involving SmackDown talent in this tournament, given that it's a title that will be on Raw because Roman Reigns and the Universal WWE title is on SmackDown. So then, you know, the question becomes, if a SmackDown person wins it, in this case, AJ Styles, you know, how do they move to Raw? Like, and how much, I think an easy solution would have been to say if AJ Styles wins, he moves to Raw with the title, and Seth Rollins replaces him on SmackDown. The tournament loser goes to SmackDown. And they don't have to phrase it that way, obviously, but the runner-up in the tournament, you know, goes to SmackDown. So that is kind of a one-for-one exchange. Obviously, doing that right after the draft would be, you know, it's an imperfect scenario, but it's one that they've sort of booked themselves into. And then, of course, you've got if AJ wins and he's going over to Raw, you know, part of the appeal of him being on SmackDown is being there with the club, with Carl Anderson and with Doc Gallows and with Michen. So, you know, what happens to them if AJ goes to Raw? So it's almost like they just have tried to hand wave it away and not address it at all. And I think it matters to people differently. Like if the brand split, you kind of already see that as a joke and, you know, it's whatever, then maybe it doesn't affect you. But, you know, if this is what you think this was the time that they were going to really do the brand split the right way, and now they're already doing this and having this potential crossover, I can see it making people upset. So where do you fall on the SmackDown being involved in this tournament when we just had the draft to split the brands and it was built upon being on one brand and only one brand?
You know, I mean, I guess the way I view it is that I came to the acceptance too that, you know, a lot of people are expecting a lot of debuts right after WrestleMania. They're expecting a lot of, you know, all right, now we've closed the chapter on WrestleMania and now we're going to move forward. And, you know, the more I had some time to kind of see it all play out, I was like, you know, I can buy into the idea of Backlash minus the name WrestleMania, but really it is the WrestleMania Backlash where we can run a few things back, let WrestleMania sink in a little bit. And then with the idea that, you know, now we've gotten Backlash out there. We did kind of a fun, different thing going to Puerto Rico. And now we can kind of shake things up, have new storylines, debut new wrestlers. You know, and just the way it's kind of played out is, you know, there is some wait and see, you know, before you make a definitive determination on all this stuff. But it seems to me that it's kind of a lot of the speculation where there's one overarching direction and then there's a little bit of meddling going on with that. Where, you know, if you're hoping for a solid brand split, I just don't think that's the overall view of where they want to go in the creative direction. I think it was an idea to kind of do during the NFL draft to get some of that cachet while people are tweeting about drafts to have WWE doing something at the same time. But I never fully felt that they were going to be committed to that. And so that I feel kind of the same way with this championship match is that I don't even think that they're thinking on that level of, well, should we explain this, that if SmackDown's involved and AJ wins it, that AJ then would, like the great explanation you just gave, that they would do a flip between Rollins and Styles. that I think that it's, to me, it's pretty much just, you know, I think it's pretty solidified that Rollins is more than likely going to win it. I mean, surely they could have AJ, you know, come back and win a championship like this. But I just don't think that they're thinking on that level, that it was, hey, we want to give a little bit of rub of this championship tournament on SmackDown and have some SmackDown wrestlers involved, because now that fills up a couple shows for us. But ultimately, you know, that they're going to go with Seth. And I could be totally wrong on that. But it sure seems to me that that is kind of the pattern WWE booking behavior that's kind of seeping in again.
Cody Rhodes versus Brock Lesnar is also set for the show. We've had Brock Lesnar and Cody Rhodes get into it, Brock costing Cody a chance in the new title tournament. Are you surprised that we're getting another match out of this? I know that Cody didn't exactly defeat Brock Lesnar decisively. It was, he sort of backdoored into the victory at Backlash. But it kind of did feel like, okay, now Brock's going to go away. Cody's going to be in the, you know, the title tournament, or perhaps, you know, go again toward Roman Reigns or whatever the case may be, even though he's on Raw. So I was a little surprised to see Lesnar come back and have them redo Rhodes versus Lesnar. And it's hard for me to see Rhodes winning two times in a row, even with him being on this quest where he needs to really rack up major victories, and getting two victories in consecutive months against Brock Lesnar is not something many people can say that they've done, and would be a huge feather in the cap of Cody, the character's, you know, his quest. So, you know, are you surprised to see them going back to Lesnar Cody again the very next month after they did it at Backlash?
I will say I'm not surprised that they're going back to Lesnar and Cody, because I always thought that that's what they should do after the way that their match at Backlash was booked. But I am pretty surprised actually that they're gonna do it this quickly at Night of Champions. I was kind of thinking maybe this is, you know, because Cody and Brock is a pretty big matchup. You know, that's a pretty big marquee matchup. And I was thinking maybe is this something that they can hold off to where Brock is off TV for a while. They get Cody a little bit involved in this championship tournament. He kind of does something else, you know, at Night of Champions, because it's, you know, it's one of their Saudi Arabia shows. And so it's not, you know, it's just we kind of view it almost at a different level of you know, some of the main shows that they have. I was going to say stateside, but I'm like, man, they're going to Puerto Rico. They're going to the UK. You can't really say that anymore. But, you know, that one of their kind of main shows that's not the one of the Saudi shows. But I think that, you know, if we are to see Cody finish the story in this, that you're right, that we need to see him continue to rack up wins. And if the Brock Lesnar, the first match that they had with each other where Cody attacks him before, you know, and then kind of gets his shoulders down for the three count, let's say, you know, but he still beats up Brock, where Brock just had a brutalized face with the stitches, the black eye. You want to ask for how does Cody look, you know, coming out of that match? I mean, he was the first to kind of really brutalize Brock Lesnar, even though he ran himself into that ring post to bust him open. I would really like to see Cody just more definitively, now that he kind of had the more of the fluky win, Brock's going to take him more seriously, and just see Cody keep winning these big time matchups, because WWE finds himself in a very unique position that, you know, I can't remember for a while where, you know, they clearly want to go with him, you know, build him up into a big baby face, but we're all kind of wondering how far do they actually want to go with him? You know, is he going to be a John Cena? Is he going to be a Roman Reigns where he's the definitive guy that they go with, that he's winning his matches? Because a lot of times when they've gone with those guys, people are getting upset because they are winning all the time. You know, it's like, oh, God, when is Cena going to finally lose? He's Super Cena. He goes through everybody. And with Cody, they find themselves in this position of people are just constantly in fear that this guy's going to lose, you know? But if he keeps winning this, I mean, this could you know, build up to something pretty big for them where they have not mm-hmm. had something like at this level. And of course, I'm someone who's still skeptical about the finish at WrestleMania, that I was, you know, one of the people thinking, man, this is the time, go with Cody. And, you know, it still could have been, you know, maybe we still should have gone with Cody at WrestleMania. But I just find this to be a very fascinating storyline that I think is really going to keep people's interest in WWE mm-hmm. to see, like, is Cody going to be the guy they go with? And it gives – and it what it does is it gets people really invested into the outcome of the matches, you know, which we don't always have. It's more just kind of, was it a good match? Was it entertaining? Did they get the crowd into it? And I think with Cody, this is really one of the first times that you're seeing, like, the outcomes of the matches and how they play out is really mattering, not just to us, like, talking on a podcast, but it matters to people who are paying tickets and going to the arenas.
Yeah, for sure. I knew I liked you, Joel. You're on my side with the Cody WrestleMania result, so I'm glad. Owens and Zayn versus Reigns and Sokoa. We had a big segment on SmackDown this past week where Roman was ready to end the Sami KO problem by taking matters into his own hands, recruiting Solo Sokoa, the most successful Uso of late, to team with him against KO and Zayn. So this is really intriguing to me. I'm really interested to see where this goes and what role the Usos play here, what role Reigns asks the Usos to play in this match. You know, does he have them come out and be at ringside to help him out if necessary? Does he tell them, stay in the back, like, I don't trust you to get the job done type of thing? So I am intrigued about this matchup with Reigns and Sokoa, and it also gives Reigns something to do when he's not defending the title and you're not forcing a challenger to build in short time and sort of wasting that opportunity here on this Saudi Arabia show.
Oh, 100%. I think that this this matchup is just such the logical step in these characters and this booking. And I think that's what really resonated so well beyond just the performances, you know, being so good of Roman Reigns and just everyone really playing their part and getting to understand the dynamic within the bloodline, that it just makes so much sense that Roman would be so upset that they dedicated the match to him. They dedicated the match and they couldn't get it done. And so now Roman's ego is so big that he's going to take matters into his own hands, and it may blow up in his face and he may hold on to some more gold. And to be honest with you, Greg, I don't know which direction they're going to go in. I'd like to think that they're probably just going to keep it on Owens and Zayn because, you know, why throw another championship on Roman Reigns when he is not going to be there, you know? But at the same time, it's like there's not a lot of depth in the tag division either, you know? So it kind of puts you in this position to where, you know, I think there's a lot of different directions that they could go. You know, this could be an instance where, you know, does something happen with the Usos where they get involved? Does Roman get upset at Solo? You know, all sorts of different things can happen. And that's where what I think is really working well for the bloodline is, again, like, people aren't just looking forward to a really good match, which I think this is going to be. I mean, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn versus Roman and Solo Sokoa, like, it's going to be a really great match, you know, provided they're given the time, it's booked to be competitive back and forth. But I think just the story is really what's captivating people here.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you've ever wanted to call into Wrestling Night in America, but you feared the phone lines are too busy, fear not. Our phone lines are open, 515-605-9345. If you don't want to call in, you can email us, wnialivecast@gmail.com. I hope this means, Joel, that people are spending time with their mothers on Mother's Day, and I don't think it's a reflection of us, at least I hope. You know, it is getting to be the summer months, and the weather is turning nice, so people are spending more time outside as well. So, you know, if you want to call, give us a call, but we'll continue talking about these big shows that we have. And actually, you know, I was remiss by not mentioning another big show that we have next weekend, next Sunday, in fact. We have NXT's Battleground event the same day as Double or Nothing. So we're going to have three major shows to preview next week, to talk about in 2 weeks. It's going to be wild. I'm interested to see what we get more calls about. But anyway, NXT Battleground, a special event, will be taking place next two Sundays from now, rather, on the 28th. And the major match that's been announced is Carmelo Hayes against Bron Breakker, NXT title. Breakker now a heel, Carmelo Hayes now a babyface. Has the shine worn off on these guys in part because they were not drafted to Raw or SmackDown? You know, we saw a number of NXT mm-hmm. talents, Cameron Grimes, Isla Dawn, Alba Fire, Indy Hartwell, et cetera, brought up from NXT to the main roster. If this was a legitimate draft where you're truly drafting the best players, you would think the NXT champion and the man who was NXT champion for much of the last year would be at the top of the list.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they were not. They were not drafted. They remain in NXT. So to a lot of fans, you know, are there questions about Bron Breakker and Carmelo Hayes and their future in WWE or their upside, their potential because they were not drafted? I mean, what do you think is the reason for it? Not even storyline, but just legitimately because, you know, I can understand Carmelo not being drafted because he is the champion, even though they drafted the NXT Women's Champion and the Women's Tag Team Champions. But what are we missing here?
I mean, I'm gonna throw a little bit of shade at NXT. If you got rid of Carmelo Hayes and Bron Breakker and brought them to the main roster, who do you have left? I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I don't watch NXT on a consistent basis, but I have been following it, you know, up from Stand and Deliver and through this past episode and into Battleground. And really, that's kind of one of the things I notice about the show is that it, you know, a lot of times we forget is that this is a, you know, show for people, for a lot of green wrestlers to kind of get some more experience, to be on TV, quote unquote, pardon the pun, you know, learn the ropes of the WWE style. And, you know, while there's a lot of talented people on NXT, you know, I think of Dragon Lee as somebody, you know, a lot of people who have come from the outside and come into WWE. But I just don't see that if you were to move Bron Breakker and Carmelo Hayes onto the main roster, I don't know who else could carry that brand. And please stop me if there's somebody else that you're thinking of who could step into that role right now. But just following the show that's obviously the main thing. And, you know, I think that a lot of people like you and me, Greg, are kind of thinking that something similarly along those lines. And that's like, oh, that's probably why they weren't brought up. Even though, you know, by all accounts, both those guys are main roster ready. They're ready to be, you know, with the other players. And, you know, you look at some of the people who were drafted to the main roster and, you know, there's some guys, you know, and some women as well, who I think are pretty talented. You know, Cameron Grimes, who seems like he could be getting a good push at the gate with squashing Baron Corbin. Geez, I'm losing my train of thought on that. But, you know, some of the other wrestlers who have come up to the main roster from there. And, you know, Grayson Waller is another person who's come up. And I just don't view, you know, those people have developed, you know, into kind of there's still some room for them to grow, where I don't feel like mm-hmm. they were these stars who were made on NXT and now they can move over to WWE main roster still as stars. I think there's still a lot of room for those wrestlers to grow. And so whereas Carmelo Hayes and Bron Breakker, to me, I mean, they're kind of the most ready-made stars who are on NXT. And when you're still needing to draw ratings and you know, carry that brand, you still need some wrestlers who are like that.
I think that's the ultimate somewhat of a problem with NXT is that you're trying to serve two masters. Ideally, when these guys are ready, you want them on the main roster. And the other flip side of it is what you said is they're so ready that if you take them from NXT, there's nobody ready to replace them. So they're needed more in mm-hmm. NXT than they are on the main roster. So that's the kind of push-pull of what And that was the problem that I think a lot of people foresaw when NXT moved to USA. You know, they could kind of get away with not drawing a huge number on WWE Network when it was on there, when it was sort of this niche program. But now you're on national television. WWE is depending upon you to draw ratings so that they can get the money from USA Network for putting you on the air. So now you're serving two masters. You're trying to develop these guys, but you're also trying to draw a rating. And if you take top guys like Bron Breakker and Carmelo Hayes, the number one and number two in whatever order you see them of NXT, and you take them out of that environment and put them on the main roster, even if they are ready, you may not have the names or the talent ready to replace them at the top spots. And fans who tune in to see Bron Breakker and Carmelo Hayes may not see anybody that they want at the top of the card, you know, or are prepared to accept at the top of the card. So that is a really good point about that. And just kind of generally speaking, the problem with NXT, I think.
Absolutely. And I think that's what really limits that brand, where I don't know what WWE's goal for growth of NXT is, but inherently it's just going to be a very limited brand where it could never be, the black and gold brand under Paul Levesque, you know, where they had all these guys from the independent scene. It's just wrestling is in a different place now, you know, where there's not all these available free agents to fill up, an NXT developmental roster that's separate from a Vince McMahon vision. And I just think that, you know, you're really in a tough spot where, you know, by all accounts, both those guys should be moving up to the main roster, and, you know, you just give them a huge push out of the gate. I mean, you could give Bron Breakker a huge push out of the gate on the main roster, and you don't need to have this, well, build him up, he was working his way in NXT. You could present him as a star right away, and I think you could probably do the same thing with Carmelo Hayes, that both those guys have that ability. And, you know, just right now in NXT, I just don't see anybody else who can take up that that spot without just people totally checking out, because I think one of the major draws for people still to follow NXT is to get invested in those characters, at the top of the card with Hayes and Breakker, that they're kind of seeing their story play out and their development play out, and when will they come to the main roster? And when that happens, I just don't think that there's a whole lot left, unless you really have identified some key players that you want to get a rub from both those guys before they go up to the main roster. And to this point with both of them, they haven't done that. You know, there's some other guys who have been around for a while. There's Ilya Dragunov, you know, who was in NXT UK. There's also Tyler Bate, same thing as well. And those guys are super talented, I can't see them carrying a weekly show on USA Network, I just don't think that they have the star power to do that overall on their entire roster.
There's an NXT Women's Championship tournament that's taking place on television. The finals will be at NXT Battleground. This past week, Tiffany Stratton beat Gigi Dolin to move into the semifinals. She will face the winner of JC Jane and Roxanne Perez, who will face off this Tuesday on NXT. Lyra Valkyria defeated Kiana James last week to advance to the semifinals. She will face the winner of Fallon Henley versus Cora Jade. So we know of Tiffany Stratton and Lyra Valkyria, both in the semifinals of this tournament. Any thoughts, Joel? I know you followed the product somewhat peripherally, but any thoughts on who you'd like to see or who you think will win the championship, the NXT Women's Championship at Battleground?
Well, it sure seems like that they've kind of made Tiffany Stratton being like the spiritual successor to Mandy Rose, playing a very similar, you know, type of character where it's heavy on the looks, less on the wrestling. But you know, they kind of check that box of that niche. And so while she does have some talent, I can see Tiffany probably getting to that main Battleground match. But I was really surprised that I thought this might have been the time to have Roxanne Perez, you know, against her in the final. But it looks like that all we're going to see of that would be, you know, a semifinal match. So, you know, that kind of limits, you know, who you're going to see in that final match. And while I do think Tiffany is going to go all the way, You know, it could be Lyra Valkyria. You know, I also think that Cora Jade has a chance to be in that championship match. But ultimately, I think that it just seems like they're kind of going in that same direction of putting Tiffany on top and having her hold that championship for a while.
Yeah, I think that's as good a guess as any, is having Tiffany Stratton as the champion. I think that makes a lot of sense there. And, you know, I look at the list, who would be contenders, Cora Jade maybe, although she's kind of fallen off a little bit since her feud with Roxanne Perez. Mm-hmm. And Roxanne, really the only other one, and, you know, she's going to be in the semifinals match most likely against Tiffany Stratton. So, you know, she probably won't even necessarily be, you know, if Stratton and Perez would be an interesting finals, but to be in the semifinals, it's like, ooh, you know, that tells me Stratton in the finals there. So
exactly.
We'll have to see on that. Anything else from NXT that struck you? I know, you know, when I invited you on tonight, I kind of told you to be prepared to talk NXT. And from what you've seen recently, catching up a little bit on that, anything else stood out to you from watching NXT?
You know, nothing in particular. What I did notice is that, you know, really kind of taking an in-depth look at this past episode, that, man, they're fitting a lot of stuff within those 2 hours, where it reminds me a lot of, like, Dynamite, where it's like there's a lot of backstage segments, there's a lot of vignettes. They're trying to throw a lot of stuff at you, which, you know, I can appreciate because of the take that I just had earlier that, you know, that I feel like they really lack stars, and I feel like a lot of the stars really lack charisma. And what they're really trying to do is trying to do what they can within those circumstances, where really, I mean, the main thing is that you got to be looking for wrestlers who love wrestling, and this is like what they live, breathe, and do. What they've decided to do is take on a lot of, you know, athletes and good-looking people from different industries and stuff, and kind of make them into wrestlers. And just when you're watching the show, like I have over the past few weeks, it just really really is striking, you know, how much there is a lack of charisma on that show. And I think it really has less, and a lot of people would point to, you know, the small venue, having the same crowd, there's a lot of the sameness in there. But I really do think that what they're trying to do is get more, you know, more character development, more stuff out there to get you to understand who these people are and what their motivations are. But I really do think it's going to take more than just that in getting some new talent in there and identifying some people that you really want to go all in on, because you're dedicating a lot of those resources. And, you know, I watch a ton of NBA and, you know, follow a lot of the teams and how do you build a team to win a championship. And, you know, as me and Wade are the sad Timberwolves fans, where after years and years and years of, you know, things just not working out. And really what we've come to in 2023, looking at the past year since Kevin Garnett left to the Boston Celtics, is they have had a very difficult time identifying the right person to build around. You know, that they brought in people with different talents who fit well, you know, on other teams. Maybe they're a number three, maybe they're a number two on a really good team, but they've had a very difficult time identifying who is the number one face of the franchise and who are we going to build around. And I just see that as very much a thing for WWE that is going to be a challenge, because we haven't seen a lot of these NXT talents, you know, rise up to being that level of, you know, just that next mega star. And now there have been some, over the course of years. But I'm just saying that right now, other than Bron Breakker, I'm having a tough time seeing who's going to be, you know, ushering in that next level, that next class of top-tier talent.
You know, you had to mention the NBA, Joel, and I am a Grizzlies fan. And it was a lot more fun to be a Grizzlies fan when they were completely under the radar and no one talked about them. Now every time I see something Grizzlies related, it's Ja Morant does this and Dylan Brooks does this, and then Ja Morant does this again, and it's like, Oh boy, this is not the Grizzlies I grew up on. This is not grit and grind. This is not, you know, Zach Randolph and Marc Gasol. This is a different generation of Grizzlies.
Get me Tony Allen.
Please, right?
Yeah,
anyway.
I can imagine that's been a rough go, Greg. We all get a taste we're like, why does the national media respect us? Respect us, talk about us. But man, then when they do, it can be vicious.
That's what it is. It's the, be careful what you wish for, because they might talk about you, but it may not be for good things. Let's close out with AEW, since these are the big three that we're going to be talking about over the next few weeks. They've got Double or Nothing coming up on May 28th. You know, the Wembley Stadium show selling incredibly well. I think it's – if you're someone who is anti-AEW, I think it's getting harder and harder to come up with, move the goalposts, I think, in criticizing AEW for what they've done. Mm-hmm. So the main event is the Four Pillars match, MJF, Darby Allin, Jungle Boy Jack Perry, and Sammy Guevara. Taking a risk here, there's no Jon Moxley in the main event. There's no Kenny Omega in the main event. No Adam Page, no Adam Cole, no Bryan Danielson. This is, do you see this as somewhat of a risk for AEW to go with MJF and three wrestlers who, to my knowledge, have not main evented a pay-per-view before? That's a lot on the shoulders, I think, of MJF. I'm sure he welcomes it because that's just the kind of competitor he is, and he wants to go out and show that he can main event a pay-per-view, and it doesn't, it's not Jon Moxley drawing the buy rate, or it's not Kenny Omega or the Elite drawing the buy rate. Whatever they get is him for the most part. But what kind of risk, if any, do you think AEW is taking here by having this sort of main event?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, this, at least for this show, they're going in a different direction where the two announced matches for the show is FTR, very good tag team, very much liked by the crowd, but the championship match against Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal, so not a great, it's just not what we would typically be used to from an AEW pay-per-view, that these are the best stuff that they can put on. And it just feels like that for this Double or Nothing show, that right now it just is not, it doesn't feel like the top tier stuff that they could be putting on. Obviously I think Tony Khan's mind is less on this upcoming pay-per-view and more around the CM Punk, the announcement of the AEW Collision show, provided that is the name of it, as we assume it is. And then also the Wembley show, Forbidden Door. There's a lot of other things that are coming up on the horizon, that this show is almost kind of, I don't want to say forgotten, but it certainly seems like the least big of everything else that's been announced, that it just doesn't feel like something that's huge, that it's almost like something where they're just going to kind of go through the steps of the pay-per-view. There's going to be a lot of really good matches. We're going to talk about how many 4-star plus 5-star matches there was on the show. But right now there's just nothing, there's no like big hook that I'm looking forward to, in contrast to the Night of Champions, where I said there's several matches where I'm really intrigued in the outcomes. And I think that's the big difference when you were mentioning before, like the people who want to bash AEW. I mean, I was somebody who was, I would consider myself on the ground floor of AEW, going to the All In show, following Cody, ever since he left, WWE, seeing him at an indie show at a small bar in St. Paul here, and just kind of following that whole story, to where now we're kind of seeing a little bit of the difference as to what is really gets a promotion hot. Which is not, it is a combination of a lot of different things. But in WWE, we're seeing that when people say they're hot, they're selling more tickets, everything's going well, that a lot of people are interested in the characters and the outcomes and what's going to happen next. And I feel that even though AEW, you know, first time in the market in UK, historical thing to sell all those tickets, that, you know, right now, that's what they're really lacking in their product. And I don't think that that's, you know, bashing AEW or taking one side against the another, but it's something that I think has been, a spotlight's been put on that, especially with a lot of stuff going really well in WWE, that they just don't have anything that's like this main story that you're trying to watch and see how it unfolds. Unfortunately, I feel like the main story in AEW is what's not seen on television, which is CM Punk and, you know, the stuff that's going on, you know, the stuff that's surrounding that and what the reaction is going to be in the locker room, how is he going to be booked. And so it just feels like everything else that's kind of playing on TV is, you know, is almost just kind of background stuff until we get to this other destination that's not even being promoted on TV yet. So I find that to be just kind of an issue, and just having the main event be, you know, what they are promoting as the Four Pillars tournament, where really I just don't see it at this point. If you're comparing the Four Pillars to All Japan in the 90s, you know, MJF, I feel, is a major, major star, but I just don't feel like he's at a point yet where his star power can help raise up the other guys in the match. I very much see it as MJF is kind of the big main star. He's been the champion for a while. He's been promoted as such, one of the best talkers in wrestling. And here's three other guys who are pretty talented, you know, and we don't know exactly what their ceilings are yet. We're getting an idea of some of the floors for them, but, you know, I'm just kind of hoping that this match can really elevate these guys. But to this point, I don't think anyone has any reason to believe that MJF's going to lose the championship. And I feel that that's a pretty big issue going into the pay-per-view, unless they can round it out with some other pretty compelling stuff. And I know that what hasn't been announced yet is, you know, the Elite stuff with the Blackpool Combat Club, Chris Jericho and Adam Cole. All that stuff's going to be really good. But again, my point is that I don't feel that this stuff has that hook of really being curious to see what's the outcome and where's it going to go from here. How does this change the journey and the trajectory of each of these wrestlers? And where I think that all these are going to be good matches. I think FTR is going to get, you know, one of the best matches out of Jeff Jarrett that he's had in, you know, forever. But where do you go from there? You know, what's the ultimate storyline? Because I feel like I'm just waiting for CM Punk to return.
So you bring up, the idea that Tony Khan could be distracted. You mentioned all of the things that he has going on besides building this pay-per-view. How much of it do you think really is Tony Khan being distracted by CM Punk and Collision in Wembley Stadium and everything else that's going on? And how much of it is a conscious decision to either hold back the number of matches that have been announced so far or go in the direction of the Four Pillars in the main event? Is it, you know, him kind of throwing up his hands and saying, you know, we're going to put on this pay-per-view. It's going to be a really good pay-per-view from an in-ring standpoint, but we're not going to build it in the same way that we've built the others because we've got Wembley coming up and we've got, you know, CM Punk to build toward and everything like that. Or is it just kind of happenstance that they've done it this way?
Well, I think that in Tony Khan's mind, because he's going to know a lot more of the ins and outs of the business happenings with AEW than any of us, that I feel he thinks that they're in a really good spot, you know, with the incoming announcement of the show, Wembley selling as many tickets as it did, that I think he feels that they're in a spot where they're doing really well, and he can still experiment with trying different things and learning you know, from different ideas. Like at the All Out show last year, we didn't have the main event announced until, what was it, just the Wednesday before, even though we all knew it was going to be, you know, Moxley versus CM Punk. It wasn't officially announced until right before. And I think he's just, you know, trying and experimenting with different ideas, knowing that I don't think from AEW we're just going to see like a total, like, they didn't put anybody huge in the main event, so now nobody bought this pay-per-view. I think there is kind of a water level of how many people are going to be interested in buying this pay-per-view. And it can, you know, if there's really nothing on the show, it dips down to a certain level. And then I think if it's really intriguing, it can go up to a certain level. And they just haven't gotten up to that next tier level yet. And hopefully that can be, you know, the Wembley show. We don't know if that's going to be a pay-per-view or not, but I think they're hoping that that's going to be kind of the next tier. But this just allows him, you know, a little bit of a sandbox to experiment, try different things. But I definitely think that, you know, what we're seeing too when we talk about with bookers is that there was a lot of really good stuff, you know, at the beginning. Tony Khan was kind of finding his way with things. And now I just kind of feel we are a little stagnant. And I do think that Tony Khan, I just don't think that a person is capable of doing all that stuff and doing it super well all the time unless there's some great delegation happening. So I don't know how much he delegates out the booking. I don't know how much he relies on other people to feed some of these ideas. But right now, I mean, on paper, and then with some of those projected matches that I talked about, it just feels like this is one of the weaker shows outside of the, you know, the Jacksonville pandemic shows, that this just doesn't feel like it has that hook yet. And obviously a lot can change. There's still two more Dynamites, but certainly he keeps falling into these patterns of waiting until the last couple weeks. And there may be some metric that says, hey, you want to wait till the last couple weeks, wait till the last week, announce a bunch of stuff, and that's what gets people really excited to buy the show. You know, because we're less of the days where it's call your pay-per-view provider, order the thing in advance so you don't have issues, even though you probably should still do that with Bleacher Report Live and some of the other streaming services. But I tend to think that there's got to be something that he's leaning on that's saying that, you know, to wait to hold the matches. And also I think he's making tweaks along the way, but I think he has a really good idea of the direction that he's going, probably even for the next few pay-per-views. But as you know, different things happen in real time, injuries happen, crowd reactions change, he's probably making a lot of changes to the card before he gets the whole thing solidified.
Well, I've got some good news and bad news, Joel. The good news is that people, we're not unpopular. People don't not want to talk to us. The bad news is it's because something's wrong with the switchboard here and everything's blank. I see your call. I see me. The on-air button is not on. It's not counting down. Everything's blank. So I'm not even sure that we're on the air. But what I can tell you is this is being recorded so that at least the people listening tomorrow will be able to hear us. So it is not all for naught. And so I apologize if you try to call in tonight. I'm not sure what happened. The fact that I can see Joel obviously tells me something's working, and I'm talking to him on the switchboard, so I'm not sure why. And I only noticed this like halfway through the episode, and then Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee, he wanted to call in and talk. He wants me to say to you, Joel, that he hopes to get to talk to you soon. Sorry, Sean. I'm not sure what happened. This has never happened to me before. I've never had a problem with the switchboard, but I'm seeing blank right now. I see you, I see me, and no other caller. So that explains it, for better or worse, but I hope this doesn't happen next weekend when we have to preview three big shows and we want to hear from callers and emailers. And if you want to talk to us and make sure that, you know, the great way to make sure that the workaround to any kind of problems is to email us, wnialivecast@gmail.com. And I just got an email from Sean. So we have one more thing to talk about before we go, Joel. He says, hey, Greg and Joel. Hey, guys, I guess the switchboard is messed up, so I had a few questions. But the first was talking about the WWE women's division, but especially the Becky-Trish feud. I think Becky is in a tough spot. I didn't like the segment on Raw, and I don't like the feud with Trish overall. Trish was good in her time, but I'm just not excited by what she's doing. I was intrigued by her heel turn, but it's already falling flat. After Becky, you would think wins this feud, where does she go? There aren't a lot of big challenges for her on Raw. The other question is about Bianca. Why are they going back to Asuka? I like Bianca a lot, but she also feels so stagnant. Plus, she oversold the Miz to a ridiculous level. How do you guys feel about the division as a whole? I appreciate all you guys do for the Torch, and everyone go VIP. Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Sean, thank you for reaching us some way, somehow, here tonight. PWTorch.com/VIP. So let's start with Trish and Becky. I, unlike Sean, was not a fan of this idea even to begin with, but like Sean, I still don't like it. So we ended up on the same wavelength, even though we started in separate places. Like, even like Trish's promo that explained her heel turn was just like so monotone, and so there was like no emotion behind it. And I don't know, maybe that's a character choice, I don't know. And then her follow-up promo was kind of the same way, and it's like, you know, there.
I don't know. It's a choice.
Well, yeah. Well, there's that too. I'm trying to give her the benefit of the doubt, but this.
Yes.
I don't know that anyone wants to see a legend like Trish Stratus come back and play heel, especially when she's probably best known for being a babyface. And I just don't think it's worked. You know, I think it's something for Becky to do that feels big because it's, you know, Trish doesn't come back a lot and she's been treated as a star of history, I guess, in WWE when she has come back.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Becky Lynch versus Rhea Ripley, that's the money match on Raw. And I don't know if they go into it right after Becky and Trish, where they maybe go to SummerSlam or what the deal is, but that's the match you're looking out for. That's the one that you're sort of waiting for. Like, you know, kind of like Cody and Roman. We're going to get back to Cody and Roman at some point. Everything else is just biding time till you get there. Kind of feels like that's what they're doing with Becky Lynch and Rhea Ripley.
Yeah, yeah. Again, thank you, Sean, for sending in the email here. I was getting worried, Greg. I'm like, man, Greg's not going to ask me again. We didn't even get Ryan from Cumberland to call in. Jesus, man. This is not looking good for me. But, Sean, thank you. You know, Greg, I agree very much with that. You know, the thing is that Trish, you know, I think people like the idea of a lot of stuff with Trish better than some of the execution. I think that people have a lot of good memories of the stuff with Trish, and I think that there, in ways, she is a very, very talented performer. Even, you know, just the whole execution of the heel turn, you know, after WrestleMania was just weird because he didn't have Lita there either, and just kind of felt wonky. That's like, okay, now this is just what we have to do, and kind of going through the motions on that. And then I got a little encouraged because I've been following Trish on the social media, and she's definitely been playing into this new heel character. And I really liked what I saw, that she was kind of, you know, just kind of talking about her greatness and kind of just doing it in a way that just felt right for this period in wrestling. You know, and then just kind of the rest of the way it plays out is just kind of back to that old, like, Mean Girls, like WWE Mean Girls stuff, where it's less about who's the best and it's more just kind of like, you know, picking on people. I don't know. It's there is a difference there of trying to build up the feud versus just kind of like the childish high school antics, which can be seen throughout, you know, any level of wrestling show, you know, of the locker room stuff that goes on. But I think you're definitely right that the main match that you're looking forward to is Rhea Ripley having that match against Becky Lynch. And that, again, it could be something that they're saving for either Money in the Bank, saving that for SummerSlam. And so this gives you a little detour, you know, for Trish to, you know, have a little bit of a comeback run other than just, you know, one match at WrestleMania, to give her something. And, you know, then maybe it's something short and that she earns the respect of Becky Lynch, blah, 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 you know, and you just kind of move on from there. But I would just agree that it just doesn't feel like the right place and time for this feud because, you know, Rhea Ripley's the champion and stuff should be revolving around the championship. But then it feels like we just got this other thing over here with someone who is a much bigger star, Becky Lynch, versus a returning star. And it just is really kind of overshadowing the stuff from Rhea Ripley. And right now it's just not doing her any favors, you know, especially when it's like the match that she gets on Raw is, you know, is Dana Brooke coming back for the however many, you know, times that she's come back to say that she's going to come and do something. And so it just feels like she's so much more in the background where she should be more in the forefront. And then the other people are gunning for that championship. So it's just not the most ideal execution. But I get it. You know, you want to get, like I said, you want to get a little more out of that return from Trish. And so this gives her something a little bit different to do. Everybody likes playing the heel role and, you know, doing, trying to see if they can still get that type of reaction out of the crowd. And, you know, for me, it's just kind of waiting to see this match play out whenever it does and just kind of move on from there.
And then on SmackDown, Bianca Belair versus Asuka, feud that started on SmackDown on Friday night, is both, to me, Joel, surprising and not surprising. Surprising because
yeah.
they just did the big match between these two, although Asuka wasn't a heel, and she appears to be a heel now, so it's a little bit of a different direction for Asuka. But also not surprising because when you look at the SmackDown women's depth chart, there aren't a lot of really appealing options for Bianca outside of another match with Asuka.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that is, you know, the conundrum of when you do these when you do some of these roster splits and stuff, that I think having like a soft split helps give you that flexibility where you can really take a look at the roster as a whole and you can pluck people and put them in different positions. Because I just was not a fan at all of seeing Asuka come back out there and going for it again and then doing the mist. And then this time, you know, Bianca is just selling this like crazy and just selling this to just an absurd point to where it just makes Bianca look like less of a star, just rolling around. And the explanation on social media was Asuka said she put an extra spice in her mist this time. Man, that's just not that's not what I'm looking for at a championship level in wrestling.
Yeah, it's disappointing that this is the, you know, they could have put them anywhere they wanted, and they could have made SmackDown a little deeper so that they didn't have to go right back to this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, maybe there's a method to their madness that we don't see yet, but it does seem a little disappointing that we're rerunning this one again already. Even as much as I enjoy Asuka and I enjoy Bianca Belair, it does feel like a bit of a rerun, a little too soon. I think that's the biggest problem. I wouldn't mind seeing it again at some point, but not this soon after we just saw a big build and a big match at WrestleMania between these two.
And this incarnation of Asuka with just, you know, blowing mist and, you know, kind of being a little playing mind games, right? That type of version of Asuka. I want to see the competitor, the wrestler Asuka versus Bianca Belair and less of the shenanigans stuff. So that's why it was just a little more groan inducing for me.
Yeah. Well, Sean in the DM says that he can hear us and he's listening to us. So that's a good sign. I don't know what else is going on. I don't know how to explain why we can't see callers or anything like that. But anyway, Joel, that's the end of what I have tonight. I appreciate you joining me here tonight and sort of filling that void in between Backlash and what we've got coming up a couple weeks from tonight. So right now, before I let you go, just let us know what you do for The Torch and where we can find your work.
Yeah, well, Greg, man, this show just flew right by. I mean, I was just looking at my phone. I'm like, really? Last segment here? Okay. But it's always great talking to you. And, you know, right now I'm not doing as much right now with The Torch. There's just, you know, I mean, lots of life things going on. And I've always been talking to Wade and wanting to do some more stuff. But, you know, always doing these shows, I mean, is just so much fun for me. You know, so anytime I get the invite or get an opportunity to come on one of these shows and just talk about anything with you guys is always a treat for me because, you know, I don't have as many people to talk about wrestling and this different kind of stuff on this level. And so it's always really fun, but today was a big day for you, Greg. Did you watch the XFL championship game?
Did I watch the XFL championship game? What a silly question.
You covered it.
Joel. I covered it. I was tweeting about it all night last night. Yes, it was the first XFL championship game in 22 years. We've come to the end of season one of XFL 3.0. There will be a season two. At least that's what everybody is saying. No reason to think otherwise. So you kind of take a breath and kind of like, exhale a little bit. You say, okay, we made it. And now you can, you know, this is the first real off season of the XFL ever. Like it they've never had a legitimate off season.
Your job's just
so
getting started.
Kind of, I am. And it's really uncharted territory. And you know, the season doesn't end with the championship game. This is where the excitement starts.
Yeah.
Finding new players.
Yep.
And we've already got a couple players who, they can't announce until tomorrow. They can't officially sign, but Ben DiNucci is signing with the Broncos, as is Jacquez Patrick. Both of them played in the XFL this year. So, you know, just a lot of exciting times. The excitement doesn't end with the championship game. So that was really cool. It was really cool to see them. You know, they did the God Bless America and the National Anthem, and they had the trophy presentation after. It was treated like a legitimate championship game, which was awesome. So, yes, thank you for bringing that up, Joel. To answer your question, yes, I did watch.
Yes, I'm one for sometimes phrasing questions kind of dumbly, but yes, that's awesome. What do you make of the 4-6 Arlington Renegades beating the 9-1 DC Defenders?
You know, that's what football is all about. It's not the best team throughout the year. It's who's best on that night. And credit Arlington, they beat D.C. They beat Houston, which was the second best team in the league, in the semifinals of the playoffs. So, you know, they might have backed into the playoffs a little bit, but they earned the wins that they got. They were the better team in both games. You can't say that, you know, well, D.C. was the better team that last night, but Arlington got a couple lucky breaks. No, I mean, Arlington played better. They were a completely different team with Luis Perez at quarterback once they acquired him from Vegas. So I'm actually a little surprised that the narrative since last night hasn't been focused more on Arlington, you know, clinching a 500 record with their championship win last night, which is not something you could usually say for a championship level team. You know, that was my concern, was the narrative would be less about the experience and the atmosphere and the culmination of the season, and then would instead be about, you know, look at this league that has a 4-6 team winning a championship. So I'm glad that hasn't been the focus, although,
yeah.
You know, I'm sure it will be a discussion point for management in the off season about whether or not they can guard against something like that happening in the future, perhaps just taking the four best teams by record, regardless of where they are in the divisions. That could be a discussion point because of what happened, but that's an off-season discussion.
Right, and I've seen that Dwayne Johnson and Danny Garcia have said, you know, they've obviously learned a lot from this season, and that there will be some changes moving forward. So is there a draft coming up next, or what's next for the XFL?
Well, that's a good question. As I said, this is uncharted territory for the XFL, so you would anticipate a draft of some sort. I'm not sure what that's going to look like. The USFL, ahead of their second season, did something that was, you know, a little odd in that they drafted NFL draft eligible players. So they were drafting college players who would be in the NFL draft, but they were drafting the rights to these players. So, for example, Jarrett Horst, an offensive lineman for Michigan State, was drafted by one of the USFL teams, and he was signed as an undrafted free agent by the Dolphins, so obviously he went there first, and was cut this weekend after rookie minicamp. So if he were to decide to sign with the USFL, his rights would be held by the team that drafted him. So I don't really think I like that process as much as just kind of drafting a pool of eligible players, because you're kind of drafting guys in theory rather than actually drafting them, because they may never actually play for you.
Yeah, it's a risk.
So, yeah, there's a lot of – and it doesn't – it doesn't necessarily prevent these guys from going to the XFL either. Like, you know, the USFL having his rights, to my knowledge, doesn't mean that he has to go to the USFL over the XFL. It's just that if he decides to go to the USFL, team would have his rights. So I don't really like that. I would just like to see anyone who's in the pool, who's eligible, who signed an XFL contract and wants to play in the league is in the draft pool again. So I don't really know. They haven't explained that process yet. They haven't explained really any kind of player acquisition or roster management of the offseason yet. So hopefully that'll come. I'm trying to give the league a little time to breathe before I start reaching out to people and for interviews about, hey, what's going to happen this, you know, trying to give them like a week or two, yeah, maybe grace period before I start jumping in and doing articles on that. So, but yeah, it's like I said, uncharted territory. It's going to be really interesting. And that's, to me, like the games, yeah, they're great, but like my interest is like the roster management and the player acquisition and that, and the scouting and the that sort of thing. So that's kind of the off season is kind of where I like to shine, where my analysis pieces, where, you know, that's where I have the most fun, strange as it sounds, covering the league and writing about the league is that sort of thing. So we'll see if you follow me on XFLboard.com where I write, and follow me on Twitter, that's become a lot more XFL-centric than pro-wrestling-centric over the last few months. Those questions will be answered there as soon as I know.
Yeah, the big question is, I don't know if you're familiar with the musical Hamilton, but it's kind of, they fight the war, and now they've won the war, and the king comes out, and he says, "What comes next?" And that's kind of the big thing is you put together this league, and now it's what comes next, because you look at all these other different major leagues that are out there, and there's this whole culture around the off season and how everything works with the managers and the agents and, you know, all the drama and storylines and stuff that comes from that. And I feel like for especially a league like the NFL, that's where they get some of their most some of the most coverage is talking about those things like the draft and where guys are going to go next. And I think that, beyond just putting a good product out on the field and having really good games and, you know, try and develop some players into stars, if they get too big into stars, then they'll probably jump to the NFL. But I feel like trying to get that culture going and getting that buzzworthy news is going to be one of the next things to kind of keep them in the conversation going into season two.
Yeah, Dani Garcia, when she bought the league with Dwayne Johnson and Redbird Capital, you know, in her interviews that she did with media afterwards, said she wants to make the league a, you know, 365-day-a-year league. And I assume it's kind of in the vein of what the NFL does, where, yes, the NFL has an off-season from games, but there really is no off-season. It's free agency. It's the draft. It's the schedule release. It's training camp. It's mini camp. And it's always something. And I think her goal – and we'll see how they execute it in this off season. But her goal is to do something similar, have some kind of projects in place to keep the league in the hearts and minds of its fans, even when they're not playing games. So we'll see what form that takes, if any, this off season. Or, as you said, they just are trying to figure out what are we going to do next? You know, what do we do for an encore? What do we do this off season in terms of all that management type of stuff? So, Joel, thank you for giving me time to talk about the XFL too as well. I really appreciate that.
Love
I appreciate
it.
You having on. So thanks for joining me tonight, and we'll have you on again soon.
Thank you so much, Greg. Looking forward to doing it again, man. Appreciate the talk on wrestling and XFL.
Absolutely. And for all those of you who are listening, don't forget, big preview show next Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern, PWTorchDailyCast.com. We'll have a guest co-host and taking your phone calls, knock on wood, taking your phone calls and emails next weekend, because if it's Sunday, it's wrestling night in America.